The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Taking a relationship to the next level, this is Passion with Dr. Lori.
Welcome to Passion, a show all about love, sex, and relationships. It's Friday night, which means I share some of the latest news stories with you. Usually, it's 34 Play Friday when Kaya Bear is here in town, but he is not. So the Alouettes, I believe, are playing out of town, I think, tomorrow. So it's just me and me sharing with you some of the latest news, some of the latest research about different issues related to sexuality. So if there's anything you want to share with me or something related to relationships, sexuality, something you've heard, maybe an event or anything that our listeners, that you think our listeners would want to hear, we'd love to hear from you. 514-800 if you'd like to text in. If you want to call in, it's 514-790-0800. First of all, I just want to thank Paris Mansouri, who sat in for me on Wednesday evening. Always does a great job when she moderates our panels. So thank you very much. And to our millennials who joined her on Wednesday evening, very much appreciated. All right. Do you ever wonder how many dates you should wait to have sex? Can't believe there's actually research on this, but there definitely is. So there was a survey done, a study of 2,000 American adults. And you know how there's this, I'm sure you've heard of the three-date rule, right? Well, apparently that three-date rule doesn't work anymore. At least that's not what this study showed. The results showed that the average person, at least that was polled here, would wait until date number 8, ideally, before having sex. The study found men feel sex is appropriate at any point from date 5 onwards, but women would rather wait until date 9. On average, men were 9 times more likely to be okay with sleeping together on the first date. So it was 9% of the guys said they're okay with sleeping together on the first date, and only 1% of the women said that. I thought this number was pretty low, to tell you the truth, but anyhow. 30% of men and 8% of women think sex should happen inside the first 3 dates. So 30% of the men and 8% of the women. The rest thought more than 3 dates. Let's see what else is happening. So things tend to move slower, it seems. Even the kiss, the first date kiss. So they asked couples, like, when do you kiss? First date, second date, third date. So 1 in 6, 17%, will always kiss on the first date. 39% will kiss if a date has gone well. 45% say a first date kiss for them will rarely or never happen. So almost half of respondents said they do not kiss on the first date. I think this was a topic that the millennials looked at. Men are more eager to kiss on a first date and are more than twice as likely to say they always kiss on a first date if it's gone well. The younger a person is, the more likely they are to kiss at the end of a first date, according to results. So also in terms of making the first moves, guys make the first move, but only about 3% of women think they should be the ones to initiate the first kiss. So guys, you're the responsible ones for initiating the first kiss, apparently. In terms of how many people you date, 1/5 of the respondents have dated 3 or more people at the same time. And even those who claim they were exclusive, 30% of people confess that they have a backup person in mind if their current relationship fails. So all those rules that we've had, they seem to have changed. Or maybe there's just no rules anymore. There's just no rules. So it's slower. It's actually, things are seem to be moving slower, which is also very interesting. So do you know about polyamory? You know the difference between polyamory and polygamy? A very interesting article by Alison Crawford that talked about Canadian polyamorous and their legal challenges. So looking at it from a legal perspective, So Canadian family laws, she states, which adapted for common law and same-sex couples, as well as multiple parents of children. So now, like in BC, for example, you can be named as, you can be three parents on the birth certificate, for example, especially if you use reproductive technologies and all of that. So there's all kinds of legalities around that, maybe not across Canada, but certainly, you know, in some places. So now there's a new research on polyamory. So there's a guy by the name of John Paul Boyd. He is the director of the Canadian National Research Institute for Law and the Family, conducted the very first ever national survey of polyamorous families. Now, for those who don't know, polyamorous are people who choose to commit themselves to more than one committed intimate partner at the same time. So they usually have a primary partner, but then they have other significant relationships as well. But it's on the up and up, meaning everybody is aware of everything. It's not the same as cheating. It's an open relationships, but they are, and it's different from swinging relationships, which are often just based on sex. Polyamory is based on relationships. So it's not like a huge population of polyamorous, but significant enough, and it seems that the population is actually growing. So for this survey, 550 people responded to the survey, and they found that most of Canada's polyamorous live in BC, Ontario, and then Alberta. Half of the respondents reported having relationships that involved three people. Most choose to live in two households. However, 23% of those surveyed said at least one child lives full-time in their house. The respondents also reported higher levels of education and income than most Canadians, yet only one-third of those polyamorous said they had taken legal steps to formalize the rights and responsibilities of everyone in the family. So these are multiple families, kind of like sister wives, but not exactly, because it could be guys, it could be women. It really is not the same as polygamy. Polygamy is typically faith-based. They are patriarchal arrangements, meaning it's one guy and multiple wives where they marry more than one woman. And polygamy in this country is illegal, but polyamory is perfectly legal because nobody's married to more than one person. There's usually one marriage, if any, and just multiple relationships. And the difference between those two as well is that relationships, at least the polyamorous say that their relationships are consensual and egalitarian versus the polygamous relationships. So nothing in the criminal code stops three or more consenting informed adults from living together and engaging in a family relationship how and as they please. So he was curious to see, like, what kind of legal help are people asking him for? And he is seeing things like health care issues, emergency care, child care, all kinds of things that we kind of take for granted when we are in a marriage or not common law, but when we have kids with somebody else. There's kind of legal precedence over all of these things. But when you're more than two people in a relationship, it kind of complicates things. So, and the law recognizes families as basically two adults plus children. They don't look at more than one parent, but that seems to be changing, and there's parts of Canada where a polyamorous family was recognized as parental rights. Like, they had their parental rights as polyamorous. So that's interesting. So that is changing. I don't know what your thoughts are on polyamory. It's not polygamy. Again, it's polyamory. Would you be able to manage that, you think? Have one marriage but multiple relationships at the same time? Other people you were invested in. I don't know how people would find the time to invest that much, but it seems to work for a lot of people who engage in polyamorous relationships. Your thoughts on this? 514 800. At some point in the program, we'll play Dirty Minds, and actually, I've got one. It's called Dirty Deeds. It's a little bit different, and your chance to win a monthly, 1 month unlimited pass to Cielo Yoga and Fitness Studios.
The latest trends and hottest topics, love and sex, handled honestly and with passion. Here's Dr. Lori, CJAD 800.
Tonight on the program, we take a look at sex in the news, but also what's going on in Montreal. And I just learned that tomorrow is Bisexual Visibility Day. And we have Roger here to tell us all about it. Hey, Roger.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Good. So tomorrow is Bisexual Visibility Day. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it's a day a little bit like Pride.
Okay.
But focused mostly on bisexual people. It's an international day, so it's observed all over the world on the same day.
Okay.
Every year on September 23rd.
Are there events in Montreal planned or what?
Not really that much going on this year in Montreal. There is a movie night being held at Hillel Montreal.
Okay.
But other than that, not really much going on.
Well, why not? Is there an issue with, why do we need a Bisexual Visibility Day?
Well, I think bisexuals will tell you that we kind of suffer from something that we refer to as bi erasure, which is sort of like a, I would say, a systematic or invisibility.
Okay.
People don't really see us.
They don't just not see you. They also don't believe it, right? So the gay community will say, oh, you just haven't really come out of the closet. The straight community is confused. They're thinking, oh, you're really gay. So you kind of don't fit anywhere.
That's correct.
Right.
That's very true. But also it's just like, you know, I say just a visibility thing. Sometimes you make assumptions about couples, let's say. If you see a man and a woman walking together down the street, you would just, I think, most people would naturally assume that they're a straight couple,
mm-hmm.
where it's not necessarily the case.
Right.
And also same-sex couples, you know, one would assume that they're either gay or lesbian, and it's not always the case either.
Right. So why the importance, though, of, like, what would be the message you would want to give to our listeners?
Well, I'd say one of the things is try to, I guess, make yourself known a little bit and also just connect with other people. And one of the things I've tried to do with other organizers is to organize ourselves actually on a Facebook group.
Okay.
Where we can have discussions, and we also plan occasional events where we can get together and meet new people
and try to
connect that way.
So it's a community. You're trying to create a an online community, and that you can take into real life. What is the Facebook page that we can direct people to?
Well, it's actually a group.
A group.
It's called Bisexual Montreal.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can just do a search on it on Facebook.
All right, great. So if anybody has questions, I would encourage them to maybe direct them to you in that group. And
that would
be
great.
They can certainly contact you. They can contact me. I'm happy to talk about bisexuality as well. You're right. It's often quite misunderstood, and there's a lot of myths surrounding that, which is why I think this Bisexual Visibility Day was created in part, was to make people more aware and get people talking about it.
Correct. Yeah.
Good.
That's great.
Well, Roger, I thank you for taking the time to talk to us and opening up, you know, the minds of all of us to this.
All right. Well, I really thank you for taking my call. Thanks.
All right, Roger. Happy Bisexual Visibility Day tomorrow. Take care. Once again, that Facebook group is Bisexual Montreal, so you can look that up on Facebook and join the group if you want to talk to others who are bisexual or meet other people who you might want to meet. So one of the stories we shared was, how many dates should you wait to have sex? And it turns out this three-date rule does not apply at all. And what they found is, on average, it's like people want to wait until date 8 before they have sex. And I'm just thinking and asking you guys, like, what do you think? Well, what's your rule? What's your number? Henry writes, I've always had sex on the first date, and it was the women who initiated it first. See, I hear a lot from people that they have sex on that first date from a lot of people. So I'm a little bit surprised, actually, that the majority will wait till, at least over 5. So, and that the average is 8. I don't know. What do you think? Were you surprised by that? A new nationally representative study of over 1,400 U.S. adults in romantic relationships finds that during the past year, 78% were entirely monogamous, no cheating in the past year. 12% were monogamous but totally sexless. Think about that. 12% of all of these couples had no sex whatsoever in the past year. 4% were supposed to be monogamous, but one or both partners had cheated. 1.6% were in an open relationship, maybe like the polyamorous or swinging relationships. 2.5% had not discussed their relationship structure. And 1.4% said other. I guess other identified. I don't know. The takeaway, despite growing representations in mainstream media of open relationships, the vast majority of Americans are still quite monogamous. They still believe in monogamy. So I think this fits with what we talked about earlier, which was polyamorous relationships, which are also, it's not like everybody's doing it. It's not like everybody chooses open relationships and we're a free-for-all society now. And often we get that sense because we hear so much more. Everything is so much more out there. So we see articles about people who are swingers and open relationships, and we see a whole lot more today. We're exposed to a whole lot more, but that doesn't mean that many more people are actually engaged in these kinds of behaviors. So some people choose that lifestyle, but it's not a huge number of people. There's enough, but it's not whatever enough means. But there's a significant number, but not huge. So 78% still considered themselves entirely monogamous, and that's pretty large. I read a very interesting article in Psychology Today by Barton Goldsmith about the different ways to say I love you. Now, I have this conversation a lot with clients as a marriage counselor, because some people do have trouble saying the words. And often we talk about what is somebody's language of love, right? Because they may come to therapy frustrated, saying they don't feel loved by their partner, or they complain about not being loved the way they want to be loved. And rather than try to force your partner to do it the way you think it ought to be done, we have to look at how your partner actually expresses their love to you. So just here's different ways, rather than saying, that people actually show their love. And here may be some tips to help you show your love, or maybe say it in other ways that he suggests. Practice random acts of kindness with your partner, right? So just volunteer to do things without being asked, like, oh, I'll go take the dog out, or I'll do the dishes, you sit down. Those are things that shows your love, like doing a task that wasn't asked of you. Leave coded messages, so stay in touch using emojis, use hearts, send love notes, send text messages. It's not, those are the easy things to do. Do nice things for no reason. Bring home flowers for no good reason. Don't wait till Valentine's Day. Don't wait for a birthday. Just bring home flowers. Prepare a nice meal. Do the little a little bit of extra, actually. And that is an act of love, and that will most definitely be felt. Do all the little things you did when you were dating. Think back to what you were doing when you were dating. Were you opening doors? Were you more gallant? Were you more whatever it is, however you were treating each other then, try and get that back, get some of that back. Ask your partner to tell you what you can do, then follow up on it. Ask, you can just ask directly, what would make you feel loved, right? He suggests also be kind to your partner's friends and family, which is interesting because sometimes you're not so into your partner's friends or family, but yet, so you put that little extra effort, that goes a long way. Sit down and lend your partner a heartfelt ear. Listening is really, really important. And he suggests go to bed an hour early with your partner just to kiss and cuddle. Give little gifts. Small and cheap is fine. It's just the act of giving. That's a loving action. And give spontaneous hugs and kisses. Be affectionate throughout the day. You don't have to say the words, I love you, but you can certainly show it real well with some actions. And affection goes a long, long way and so good for you. Coming up, we will play Dirty Deeds. I will read something out to you, and you have to decide what the item is that I am talking about. And your chance to win a one-month unlimited pass to Cielo Yoga and Fitness Studios. Then we'll talk about who pays for a first date. Does it really matter? Apparently it does, according to studies, but we'll check in on that.
The following program contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Your relationship's on the line. Connect with Dr. Lori now. 514-790-0800. Passion. News Talk Radio. CJAD 800.
All right, time to play Dirty Deeds. Kind of like Dirty Minds. It's not three clues. It's just a sentence. And you have to decide what I am. It's a little dirty, I have to say. But the answer is not, okay? Ready? By the way, once you know what I am, you can call in at 514-790-0800. Dave is standing by to take your calls. First caller through will get a one-month unlimited pass to Cielo Yoga and Fitness Studios. Here goes. I can't get hot unless you turn me on, but you can't turn me on unless you screw me first. But if you use me too much, I get burnt out and you can't turn me on at all. What am I? Do I have to repeat that? I'm letting that go for a bit. Let's see if anybody gets what the answer to that is, and then I'll repeat it after. So we were talking about earlier how many dates you should wait to have sex. According to this study, for relationship success, couples should wait until date 8, apparently, to have sex. However, men feel sex is appropriate at any point from date 5 on, and women would rather wait until date 9. Mm-hmm. This texter writes, 8? Who wants to waste that much time? If you're busy and only date once a week, that's 2 months. Someone's going to get overly attached and hurt. Well, I'm not sure about that connection between getting overly attached and hurt by not having sex. Could be, but okay. So you're right with busy people. But I don't know, someone, when you're starting a relationship, and let's say it's an exclusive relationship, and you're only dating, like, you only see each other once a week, I'm not sure that's enough. Like, I personally would want to see somebody a whole lot more than that. All right, here goes the clues again. This is for Dirty Deeds. It's a little bit different than Dirty Minds, but same principle. You just have to come up with, what am I? I can't get hot unless you turn me on, but you can't turn me on unless you screw me first. But if you use me too much, I get burnt out, and you can't turn me on at all. What am I? So, texter's got it, but I need you to call in. 514-790-0800, and... We have a winner, Patrick in Dorval. Congratulations, Patrick. And the answer is, I am a light bulb. Way to go. And telling you, the only way to do that is really to, you know, train yourself to get out of the gutter on that one. So congratulations, Patrick. You have won yourself a one-month unlimited pass to use at Cielo Yoga and Fitness Studios. So we saw how many dates you should wait to have sex. What about who pays for a first date, and does it matter? So research reveals that women believe that men who pay for a date are more likely to be attracted to them. Yet men view payment in a very different light. Interesting. Abundant research indicates that heterosexual dating scripts remain quite traditional, with the man expected to ask a woman out and to pay for the date. Their study further revealed that although modern singles believe it is appropriate for either party to initiate a first date, in reality, most men are the ones to do so. They found similar results regarding who should pay for a first date. While both men and women expressed their belief in the appropriateness of either party, you know, taking the bill, they also both reported that they believe the man should always pay for a first date. What do you think? Should the man always pay for a first date? They found that men have higher first date sexual expectations than women. They found this to be particularly true when the man pays for the date. And when the date takes place at an apartment versus in public, such as the restaurant or the movies. Okay, that might make a little bit of sense, but I find that interesting. So sexual expectations are there, especially if he pays. That's on his side. They discovered even more potentially troubling findings when the woman was the instigator. When a woman invited a man on a date, paid for the date, and had the date at her place, men had higher rape myth acceptance beliefs as compared to dates the man initiated and paid for, or where either partner initiated the date and they went Dutch, which is interesting. So what does all of this mean? Like, who should be going for the bill? Like, this is confusing to me and maybe a bit scary, but still traditional thinking, right? It's like, if I pay, then more likely to have thoughts of, well, you owe me sex? Is that what this is all about? Well, let's let that one go for now. Then I found out that apparently dating apps are a playground for the polyamorous. That came up twice tonight, the polyamory. So polyamory, again, is couples who are in open relationships, who decide that they can have other relationships. In other words, you and me are in a relationship. It's a primary relationship. We might be married, but we both decide that you can have a girlfriend, I can have a boyfriend, or vice versa, or whatever it is. And it could be gay relationships, doesn't matter. So that we have, it's okay. We all are in agreement that we both can have other relationships outside of our marriage or our primary relationship. So it's about relationships outside. So you might be married, but you might have a girlfriend on the side. And that girlfriend is known to your wife. It could be your husband, a boyfriend, whatever it is. So, and now dating apps, so a lot of the common dating apps are out there, are looking, you find a lot of ads for couples looking for other people, or you know, looking for secondary relationships where you're very open about being polyamorous. In other words, you say, well, I have a wife, however, I'm looking for a girlfriend, right? And so apparently that's happening quite a bit now. 514-800 to text in your thoughts. This headline was a little funny. Man accused of masturbating during half marathon in New Jersey with several witness accounts. So this man was watching a half marathon in Emerson, New Jersey last weekend, and he just began masturbating watching the thing. Dozens of runners witnessed the act, leading police to arrest this 55-year-old guy. There were several people who saw him, so there are several witness accounts. He was taken to a local hospital for evaluation. I suppose you'd have to be a little bit off, right, to do that publicly in that kind of thing. Can you imagine you're running, you're trying to do this marathon, and you look, and that's happening right there. That might be a little bit distracting. Apparently, the offense appears to have occurred about a mile into the race, meaning that the runners had about a dozen miles to go after witnessing the incident. Ooh! Alrighty. Let's see. This is for who pays on a date. It depends. If the man invites me to a date, they usually pay, but I will have money in case he doesn't say it will be one bill. Other times I've been on more casual dates where we make separate orders and pay for our own coffee. Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell these days what we should do. I think we should always be willing to pay our own way. I think it's very nice when someone invites you and takes the bill. That's lovely, but it's not, I don't think it's all that, I don't think it's necessary, but it's certainly nice. And I think for the other person who usually pays or who's, you know, more traditional, I think it's very nice for their partner to offer to pay.
Straight Talk that's all inclusive. Passion with Dr. Lori. News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
The Friday edition of Passion, where we talk about some of the sex news and studies and stories. We take a bit of a lighter side to the week. We have Tom on the line. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dr. Lori.
How are you?
Well, I'm great.
Good.
You know, more importantly, my sons are turning out to be pretty impressive young men.
That's
so
good.
It comes down to cultural norms.
We're talking about
now,
who pays, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I invite you. You're a guest.
Yeah.
And of course I'm going to pay. There are professional daters out there, and you know these women as well. I mean, I remember them back in the day, and they were popular, and they were, you know, very social, and they dated, you know, many men on a regular basis, and week after week, they were constantly out, and they were being invited.
So you're saying they went out with a lot of guys simply to get a free meal?
I think it's a byproduct.
Interesting.
You know, they're popular, they're social, they're in demand, and they're invited out. And lucky for them, you know, as guests, they don't have to pay. You know.
Well, hopefully the guys who date these women can pick up on that. And, you know, nobody wants to feel used.
You're talking men who are basically obtuse. So, you know, they're not going to, you know, see beyond the possibilities that exist of... you know, a potential
sex.
Hookup.
Okay.
Now, if you've got friends and you're out on a regular basis, you know, I mean, male friends, female friends, social friends, you know, family. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I still have vivid memories of, you know, arguing with relatives as to who's going to pay.
Right. Who's going to pay the bill? Right.
And that's fine. That's what's to be expected when you're socializing with people.
I don't see that very much. I have to tell you, when we're socializing and we go out multiple couples or whatever, everybody pays their way, and it's never about who invites who. It's let's go out.
That's the reality of living in North America.
Yeah.
If you were, you know, in Capri, it would be different.
Maybe.
If you were,
yeah.
You know, it's different depending on what kind of social environment.
Tom, got to let you go. I have other stories I want to share with our listeners. Thank you very much for your input. Gray writes, in similar story to your marathon masturbator, I heard a story from a cop. He received a call about a young man in his car furiously pleasuring himself in the parking lot outside of a supermarket. He arrived and found the kid, and when he knocked on the window, he discovered that the kid had instead just turned 18 and had bought a whole pile of scratch tickets he was finally able to purchase legally. The officer wished him good luck and happy birthday and let him be. I would have thought you said that he had purchased a whole bunch of porn and then let him be, really. Another texter says, is a guy really expected to wait for date three to kiss? Some date the other two are. What does that mean? Yeah, some people say yes, wait till date two, wait till date three. Many say no, not on the first date. Anyway, I want to tell you about a little event that's happening. I think it's a fabulous initiative. Three West Island women, Simone King, Evelyn Benchamal, and Alexandra Malka, decided to organize a bra drive. So I've been busy gathering the bras that no longer fit or I use, and getting ready to deliver them. Believe this or not, they are collecting bras to donate to homeless shelters, because it's one of those pieces of clothing that we do not think to donate. And it's something that is in need. So bras don't get donated enough. It's not what people think of, yet it is for women, can be quite a necessity. All the bras will be distributed to Shea Doris and the Old Brewery Mission, which both work with homeless women. In fact, the mission president, Matthew Pierce, said bras are one of those items that shelters are in need of the most. So if you have bras you want to get rid of, ladies, donations can be made at Bebe Kelly Green at 3750 Sources Boulevard in DDO. It's right near, what's the gym called there? BuzzFit. Right near BuzzFit in that and TD Bank. It's a little strip mall there. So Bebe Kelly Green, and you can donate your bras there, and they will store them there, and then they will deliver them to Shea Doris and Old Brewery Mission. So congratulations, ladies. I think this is really great to be able to do that, and you're going to get my bras tomorrow. Feels funny to say that, right? I give you my old bras. All right. Interesting article. Expect your divorce's dirty laundry to be aired in public. Unless you live in Quebec. So interesting. So Canada's incoming Governor General, Julie Payette, recently sought to have the contents of her divorce in Maryland, her divorce file, sealed. So apparently, for most Canadians, the courts, here at least, set a high bar for restricting the public's access to court files. The public has access to all of these files, except for Quebec. All other Canadian provinces presume that both civil and family litigation will be open and subject to public scrutiny, even those involving the most intimate details of a divorcing couple. And you know, there can be lots of salacious details in those, right? So even though it's no-fault divorce in Canada, it's still written out in the maybe in the divorce proceedings, right? Things about kids, things about spouses' affairs, things related to possible abuse, for example. All of these things would be in there and would be accessible to the public. So if you're a public figure and all of this comes out, well, you know, you kind of don't want it to come out. So we are lucky, actually, in Quebec that it's much harder to get to get that information. But in some parts of Canada, you can have access to all of that. And if you don't, you have to petition the courts to do all kinds of things to make sure that that information doesn't get through. And it's not easy to do, apparently, not easy at all. So that's why a lot of people are using arbitration and mediation, which is private and that is confidential. So, but I tell you, if you want revenge or leverage in negotiations, or you want to embarrass somebody, you do it publicly like that. It's terrible. Somebody wants to know, is it hygienic to donate used bras? It's perfectly hygienic if they're washed. I would think so. Absolutely. Your breasts don't contain any kinds of diseases or anything, and even still, washed out, no problem at all. Perfectly hygienic. That's it for me, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for your text messages. I want to thank our technical producer, Dave Simon. Tonight, I want to thank Linda DeLisi, our passion researcher as well. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Dr. Lori Batito, or through my website, drlaurie.com, drlaurie.com. Coming up next on CJD is The Comedy Show with Joey Elias. We'll talk to you again on Monday evening. In the meantime, have a great rest of the evening, a fabulous weekend, and remember to live your life with passion.